Cystinosis by Elena Levchenko, William A. Gall, and Francesco Emma. Introduction. Overview. Nephropathic cystinosis deserves a special place in the annals of clinical medicine as the first treatable lysosomal storage disease. The pathophysiology itself, based upon the formation of cystine crystals within the lysosomes of cells, is remarkable. The presence of cystine crystals provides a clue to the basic defect in cystinosis, i.e., failure to transport cystine out of lysosomes. This created a new area of biomedical investigation, explained the lysosome's function in salvaging small molecules for reutilization by the cell, and revealed a new category of lysosomal storage disorders due to transport defects rather than enzyme deficiencies. Even more striking, a rational therapy of cystine depletion emerged, transforming nephropathic cystinosis from a universally fatal disease to a treatable chronic disorder with a decent quality of life and increased lifespan. Today, physicians can even observe the gradual dissolution of cystine crystals by cystiamine eye drops bathing the corneas of patients' eyes. History. Cystinosis was first described by Abderhalden in 1903, when understanding of its renal disease remained rudimentary. Fanconi, Dottoni, and Debray recognized the renal tubular defect of cystinosis in the 1930s, and this complication retains the appellation renal Fanconi syndrome today. Generalized aminoaciduria was noted as a concomitant of nephropathic cystinosis in the late 1940s, and cystine storage within cellular lysosomes was proven in the late 1960s. By 1982, the basic defect of impaired lysosomal membrane transport of cystine was reported, and therapy with the cystine-depleting aminothiol cystiamine was shown to be safe and effective by 1987. Since then, numerous extrarenal complications of cystinosis have been described, and oral cystiamine therapy has been shown to delay or prevent virtually all of them. The basic defect cystine has a molecular weight of 240 Daltons and consists of two molecules of cystine joined by a disulfide bond. The equilibrium between cystine and cystine depends upon their redox potentials and the pH of the milieu. If a high enough concentration of cystine is present, it may precipitate out of solution because of its poor solubility. Cystine, which is very soluble, is produced by the hydrolysis of proteins. This occurs within lysosomes by the action of acidic hydrolases. Cystine is then oxidized to cystine within lysosomes, where it accumulates if the cell has a genetic defect of cystinosis. Cystine can also be transported from the cytosol to the lysosomal lumen by MFSD12 transporter on the lysosomal membrane. After decades of study, scientists understood that cystine could not exit the lysosomes of cystinotic cells. Indeed, normal polymorphonuclear leukocytes were able to clear their lysosomes of cystine, but cystinotic cells could not. Studies of isolated granular fractions, i.e., lysosomes, gave similar results. In fact, normal cystine-loaded lysosomes could transport cystine in either direction across their membranes, while cystinotic lysosomes couldn't release cystine. Cystine transport in neutrophil lysosomes was subsequently shown to be ligand-specific, stereospecific, and ADP-dependent. It displayed classical saturation kinetics, figure 1, and counter-transport. Similar findings were observed in cultured lymphoblasts. In total, these discoveries prove that the process of lysosomal cystine transport is carrier-mediated and deficient in cystinosis. Indeed, heterozygotes for cystinosis displayed half the maximum velocity of cystine transport, consistent with having half the normal number of cystine carriers, figure 1. The later discovery of the cystinosis gene, CTNS, and studies of its gene product, cystinosin, demonstrated that this protein does indeed transport cystine in a process driven by the hydrogen ion gradient across the lysosomal membrane. Cell damage in cystinosis is probably not related solely to lysosomal cystine accumulation. Recent studies have revealed cell abnormalities that are directly caused by defects in the cystinosin protein, independent of its transport activity. Supporting this view, not all aspects of the cell's cystinotic phenotype are corrected after lysosomal cystine depletion by cystiamine, which possibly explains why this drug, which has dramatically changed the outcome of cystinosis, cannot treat all symptoms completely. In particular, the Fanconi syndrome of cystinosis occurs in infancy, about the same time that renal tubules appear damaged early in renal development. Cells obtained from cystinotic patients or that have been generated in knockout experimental models are characterized by impaired endolysosomal dynamics and abnormal autophagy, resulting in the accumulation of autophagosomes, mitophagosomes, and enlarged lysosomes around the perinuclear region. Studies have documented altered MTORC1 activity that is probably linked to altered interactions between cystinosin and proteins of the vacuolar ADPase, resulting in the activation of the transcription factor EB. In proximal tubular cells, impaired endolysosomal trafficking compromises the recycling to the plasma membrane of the endocyte receptors megalin and cubulin, causing low molecular weight proteinuria, as seen in Fanconi syndrome. Cell death may result from oxidative stress, mitochondrial damage, or direct stimulation of apoptosis. Impaired efflux of cysteine from lysosomes has also been proposed to alter glutathione metabolism, exposing cells to oxidation. In proximal tubular cells, accumulation of large cysteine crystals may rupture cell membranes directly, causing cell death. In addition, cysteine crystals activate inflammatory pathways through NOD-like receptors. Despite these remarkable advances in the understanding of the physiopathology of the disease, it remains unclear which events are key elements causing cell dysfunction versus which represent downstream events. Pathology patients who have not received long-term cysteine-depleting therapy exhibit specific pathological features. As a consequence of excessive cellular cysteine storage, patients with cystinosis develop microscopic crystals of cysteine, apparent within lysosomes on electron microscopy. Tissues containing cystine crystals include the cornea, conjunctiva, iris, retina, liver, spleen, kidneys, intestines, rectal mucosa, pancreas, testes, lymph nodes, bone marrow, macrophages, thyroid, muscle, and choroid plexus. The crystals are generally hexagonal or rectangular and appear birefringent under polarizing light, figure 2. Tissue damage accompanies the intracellular cystine accumulation of cystinosis, with the greatest effects in the kidney. Renal tubules show a characteristic narrowing called a swan neck deformity, followed by interstitial nephritis and endothelial glomerular proliferation, necrosis, and hyalinization. Formation of a tubular glomeruli and a glomerulotubular disconnect appears to represent a maladaptation to renal injury, contributing to the progression of renal insufficiency. Crystals are occasionally seen within glomeruli, which often contain large multinucleated podocytes. Focal and segmental glomerulosclerosis lesions in cystinotic glomeruli can be undistinguishable from idiopathic FSGS. In the eye, the retina exhibits patchy hypopigmentation, and crystals appear occasionally in the iris and rarely in the retina. In older patients, the thyroid and testes appear fibrotic. Muscle histopathology involves a late vacuolar myopathy with variation in fiber size, atrophy of type I fibers and ring fibers. In the liver of untreated adults, nodular regenerative hyperplasia can occur. Genetic cystinosis is an autosomal recessive disorder, and heterozygotes never present clinical symptoms. The disease occurs with an incidence of approximately 1 in 100,000, 200,000 live births, although there are genetic isolates of cystinosis, including one with a frequency of 1 in 26,000 in Brittany and another among French Canadians. Within the U.S. population, it is estimated that approximately 1 in 200 individuals carries a cystinosis mutation. A recent newborn screening program in Germany has identified 696 heterozygous carriers among 257,734 newborns, corresponding to a carrier frequency of 1 in 370. These numbers allow counseling of persons known to be heterozygotes because a family member was diagnosed with respect to their risk of having a child with cystinosis by an unrelated mate. The CTNS gene, the cystinosis gene, was mapped to chromosome 17-13 in 1995 and identified in 1998. It contains 12 exons within 23 kb of genomic DNA and codes for a 367 amino acid protein, cystinosin, with 7 transmembrane domains. The function of cystinosin as a cysteine transporter has been demonstrated. Over 160 different CTNS mutations, including deletions, insertions, nonsense, missense, and splice site mutations, have been reported in the Human Gene Mutation Database. They are found in different combinations in individuals with cystinosis. The promoter, leader sequence, transmembrane regions, and non-transmembrane regions are affected by different mutations. The most common mutation is a 57257 BP deletion, removing the first 9 exons and part of exon 10 of CTNS. This deletion arose in Germany 500 AD and is present in the homozygous or heterozygous state in more than half of cystinosis patients of European descent. Homozygosity for this deletion might be associated with a slightly greater frequency of non-renal complications of cystinosis in adulthood and of enhanced intrinsic skin aging. Hotspot mutations other than 57KB deletion are reported in different populations. Clinical aspects, cystinosis variants. Traditionally, cystinosis has been divided into 3 subtypes. Infantile nephropathic cystinosis is a classic disease, described below, and comprising 95% of cases. Affected individuals have 2 severe CTNS mutations. Patients with intermediate cystinosis have milder disease, with diagnosis in childhood, adolescence, or early adulthood. They eventually develop renal failure. Intermediate patients account for less than 5% of cases and generally carry 1 severe and 1 mild CTNS mutation. These patients usually present with asymptomatic proteinuria and mild or absent tubulopathy. Over time, they develop lesions that may be misdiagnosed as primary focal segmental glomerulosclerosis. Patients with ocular cystinosis, formerly termed adult or benign cystinosis, OMIM-219750, never exhibit renal failure or retinal hypopigmentation, but have cystine crystals in their bone marrow and corneas. They do have measurable residual cystine transporting capacity in their polymorphonuclear leukocytes lysosomes. The only clinical manifestation of ocular cystinosis is photophobia, and patients are generally diagnosed incidentally on eye examination that includes the use of a slit lamp. There exist approximately 20 ocular cystinosis patients who have either 1 mild and 1 severe or 2 mild CTNS mutations. The distinction among the 3 types of cystinosis is in part artificial, since there exists a continuum of disease severity rather than discrete categories. Early clinical manifestations, as for patients with several other lysosomal storage disorders, individuals with cystinosis appear entirely normal at birth. Nevertheless, the disease eventually affects nearly every tissue of the body, with variable times of onset. The signs and symptoms can be described as early and late findings, demarcated roughly by adolescence. The earliest manifestations of cystinosis involve complications of renal Fanconi syndrome and growth retardation. Renal tubular Fanconi syndrome with Rickett's cystinosis is the most common identifiable cause of renal Fanconi syndrome in early childhood. See Chapter 36, Pediatric Fanconi Syndrome. Although the proximal tubulopathy does not respond well to cysteamine, cystinosis is a treatable disease and therefore should be considered first when renal tubular solute wasting is recognized. In cystinosis, Fanconi syndrome is not evident at birth but generally appears at 6-12 months of age with variable severity. In the past, and even now, in low-resource countries, infants have died of the dehydration and electrolyte imbalance associated with the Fanconi syndrome without the benefit of a diagnosis. The Fanconi syndrome of cystinosis is nearly always complete and includes failure to reabsorb water, metabolic acidosis, electrolytes disturbances, urinary losses of minerals, amino acids, carnitine, glucose, and small molecular weight proteins. The clinical presentation of the Fanconi syndrome includes polyuria, dehydration, and polydipsia. Large volumes of fluid intake fill the stomach and reduce appetite. Phosphate and calcium wasting cause rickets with low serum phosphate and calcium, and elevated alkaline phosphatase levels. In some cases, significant hypocalcemia triggers secondary hyperparathyroidism, exacerbating bone reabsorption. Children may fail to walk because of the bone pain of rickets, and they exhibit tender, swollen wrists and ankles due to metaphyseal widening. In severe cases, frontal bossing, a rachitic rosary, and genu valgum verum develop. Osteoporosis and epiphyseal fraying are visible on radiographs. The combination of hyperphosphaturia and hypercalciuria may result in medullary nephrocalcinosis. Hypocalcemia can cause painful episodes of tetany or even seizures, especially 20-30 minutes after a dose of an alkalinizing medication that lowers circulating concentrations of ionized calcium. Glomerular damage to stenosis accounts for 1-5% of chronic renal failure in children. By the time a typical infant with cystinosis is diagnosed at approximately 1 year of age, significant renal damage has already occurred. It has been postulated that rapid progress to renal damage could be explained by inflammation caused by cystine crystals. Early podocyte injury is likely to coexist along with proximal tubular dysfunction, contributing to renal disease progression. A reasonable estimate would place the creatinine clearance at the time of diagnosis at approximately 70% of normal, and this level of function slowly but inexorably decreases. Without treatment, most children with cystinosis have reached end-stage kidney disease by age 10 and require transplantation or dialysis. In a European study of 205 children with cystinosis, the mean age for ESKD was 9.2 years. Chronic kidney disease and cystinosis resembles that of other renal disorders, but growth retardation, osteodystrophy, and anemia are often more severe. Blood pressure may increase as kidney function declines, but cystinosis per se is not a risk factor for developing hypertension. Growth impairment: newborns with cystinosis exhibit normal height, weight, and head circumference. While head circumference is maintained, height and weight percentiles generally fall by 6-12 months of age. Failure to thrive is often the first indication of the diagnosis. By 1 year of age, the average infant with cystinosis has a height at the third percentile. Without treatment, growth continues at 50-60% of the normal rate, figure 3. Weight usually follows height, but with greater variability. In patients not receiving growth hormone therapy, bone age usually lags behind chronological age by 1-3 years. Children with retarded bone age retain growth potential past the usual age of epiphyseal closure, but height is never gained past age 20, regardless of the bone age. The cause of impaired growth has not been definitively determined. Growth hormone levels are usually normal, but patients may have abnormal kinetics of growth hormone secretion after glucagon stimulation and respond to supraphysiologic doses of recombinant growth hormone. Hypophosphatemic rickets, acidosis, poor nutrition, and renal insufficiency probably all contribute to the poor growth of cystinosis. In addition, cystinosis patients develop a distinct form of chronic kidney disease, mineral and bone disorder, characterized by lower levels of fibroblast growth factor 23 and parathyroid hormone, even in advanced stages, that are related to persistently decreased renal phosphate reabsorption. Patients with nephropathic cystinosis are, on average, shorter than children with similar degrees of kidney failure due to other causes. Ocular involvement: the primary ophthalmic manifestation of cystinosis is photophobia. This occurs due to corneal crystals that first appear in the anterior third of the cornea. Corneal crystals are always present by 16 months of age on slit lamp examination and are diagnostic for cystinosis. The number of crystals increase with age, reaching a maximum density by 8 years of age. An atlas of corneal crystal density at different ages has been published. In vivo confocal microscopy and anterior segment optical coherence tomography allow for more accurate quantification of corneal crystal deposition. Crystal density among patients with ocular cystinosis appears less than that in patients with classical disease. Children with cystinosis complain of sensitivity to light at variable ages, but usually not until 5, 10 years of age. They squint to the point that, without treatment, they can eventually develop blepharospasm refractory to all modes of therapy. Often, patients wear dark glasses outside and turn down the lights inside. Occasionally, a child with cystinosis may experience a corneal ulceration as a crystal breaks through the corneal epithelium. This complication, which resolves spontaneously, occurs much more frequently in adolescence and adulthood, when haziness of the cornea often appears, but has become very rare in patients who have been treated with topical and systemic therapy since early in life. Hypothyroidism in the natural history of cystinosis. Approximately half of patients exhibit hypothyroidism by age 10.